But in all honesty, you know what I just realized?
What?
That you're not older than me. I thought you were older than me.
Why? Because of my hair?
Well, no, because you're so racist.
What?
Hello and welcome to episode 113 of the Two Hosers Photo. Oh no, sorry. Let's start that again. Isn't it the CXIII of the Two Hosers Photo Show episode? We talked about it last week, Adam.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a callback.
Hello and welcome to episode CXIII, the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. And with me, as always, is
Adam in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
I just cut you right off there. Adam, what is going on?
Not a whole lot.
Yeah, same here.
Did you hear the big news today in the photography world?
Doubtful.
Pocket Wizard introduced a new cheap trigger.
Oh, I saw something about that late last night that David Hobby had tweeted.
A basic trigger. It's going to sell for $99 starting at the end of the year. So just doesn't have the TTL capabilities. But I saw a thing about it, and I looked at it, and I thought, oh, that's perfect for most people.
Yeah, I have not read it. All I knew was that it was sub $100.
Yeah, and, which is $99.
Yeah, okay, is it?
It's $99, yeah.
It's a transceiver, which means, yeah. Basically you need two of them, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're looking at $200, which is great. I haven't seen what specs it offers. I don't know how it differs from what I use, the Alien Bees, which I happen to love, which are, one of them is sub-$60, and the other one is sub-$70 when I bought mine.
Yes.
So you can do the math on that. It's about $130 versus $200. So I'm not sure what that $200 or $70 gets you, but
it gets you the Pocket Wizard name and the Pocket Wizard reliability and the compatibility with all of the other Pocket Wizards too. So I think the idea being that, you know, you could have, you know, one of the $200 Pocket Wizards. They have a whole bunch of different names for them, but, you know, there's all different ones. And you could then add in, so people who might already have a setup, they could add in some of these $100 receivers for extra flashes rather than continuing to buy, you know, another $200 transceiver for every additional flash.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that is nice. I do like compatibility.
Yes.
I like when companies go out of their way for compatibility with, be it with plugs or anything to do with that, like USB plugs and stuff.
And I think for people who haven't bought triggers and they're just trying to get in on the entry level, they might want to buy, you know, the name brand, but not want to spend $200. And so it's perfect. I mean, essentially, they'll do everything except for the ETTL. For $99, you're getting a Pocket Wizard. The construction looks solid. I watched the video and read a couple of people's early takes on them, and everyone seems to be thrilled with the price.
Whenever I'm shooting off camera flash, I can count the number of times I've needed ETTL on zero hands.
Yes,
it just doesn't come up, and that could be my workflow, the way I operate, or what I happen to be shooting. It generally isn't, you know, nothing's changing rapidly that I can't make the adjustment myself.
Right.
So ETTL would not be a deal breaker for me.
Me either. And yeah. Again, that's why this, you know, like when I eventually do upgrade my triggers, and I eventually will, because I will break the ones I have. They're just, the build right. quality isn't there. Mm-hmm. But they still work, I've been in a few situations where I think that they're going to break. Like if you've got a umbrella mounted like at a extreme angle, and mm-hmm. the way mine work is you mount the flash on top of the trigger on top of the light stand. Uh-huh. And so yours is a different mount, right? Like it's through the PC. So on mine, and Pocket Wizard has a version that mounts exactly this way as well, but basically, if you have it at an extreme angle, it looks like, you know, you're going to rip the top right off of the cheap Cactus triggers that I've got.
Right.
So I don't trust my, you know, flash hanging in the balance on top of this trigger that looks like it's going to break the top off of it. So that's all I'm saying is there's certain things like build quality that you're not going to get with the cheap triggers. I don't know. Yours are obviously more expensive than mine, and so I don't know whether that would be an issue or not. But they're mounted differently too. So
to mount my receivers on the flash somewhere. So I basically have Velcro, and they're stuck to the flash with Velcro.
And that's how these new Pocket Wizards would be too. They would be cabled. They're not mounted like
right
on the shoe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I do that. I do Velcro and rubber bands just for a fail safe because I have dropped these before and they are pretty robust for the fact that they're essentially made of helium and plastic. Like they are so light and tiny.
You're right.
That when they did drop, one did stop working until I had to make a little adjustment. And it got it back to working. It was something very minor, but I didn't like dropping them.
Okay,
go figure. Okay. there's a little tidbit for the kids. Write that down. Yeah, no fun to drop them. So I end up doing is that, like I said, the duct tape. But I also use rubber bands. I always have a lot of rubber bands on hand for various things.
And hair elastics.
I have a couple of hair elastics for stuff on the flash, but rubber bands I use for, you never know when they come. You know, my favorite thing is, and this doesn't happen here in Germany, and this is such a weird thing to miss about Canada. When you buy broccoli in Canada, which I love broccoli, it comes with those nice blue rubber bands.
Right.
They don't have it here. It comes wrapped differently here, so there's no blue rubber band.
That's a shame.
So whenever I, like back in Canada, whenever I buy broccoli, I get a brand new wallet.
Right.
That is my wallet, is that little blue rubber band. And so I actually have to go buy the elastics here.
It's like a money band.
It's a money band. That's the thing. And it's funny because it's catching on here. Because, a few of my friends here are starting to do it. What a genius idea. I was like, well, I don't think it's really that genius. It's just a rubber band. But that never occurred to them, right? They always had wallets with every card they've ever had jammed in there. And they all have bad backs now because of it,
right?
Which I'm sure you must see in your other job.
Yeah.
You're a wallet salesman, right?
Yeah.
And so anyways, so now they've told me that other people ask them, holy cow, what is that? And they actually tell their friends it's a Canadian wallet.
That's awesome. I've never seen a Canadian with that wallet, so
I know. No, neither have I. It's just me. Actually, a few of our friends in Canada do it as well. I don't know if you've noticed. Doesn't matter. At the poker games, there's a few guys who do that now.
Okay.
So, anyways,
that's great aside.
Yeah, great aside. That's not long enough. So, there's that. We had a question on Twitter, and was directed at you.
Okay.
Psycho. That's his name. You thought it was Keiko, didn't you?
Yeah.
He corrected me off the air one time on email.
Really?
Or something. Yeah. His last name is Psycho.
Awesome. Okay, well, hit me with the question.
Growing up in high school, wouldn't that be the greatest last name?
Yeah, it would probably keep a few bullies away.
That as well, but just like when you have the built-in nickname, I think you're off to the races because like the last thing you want is a bad nickname.
Yeah. Is that a good nickname?
I don't know, but it's built in. Like there's no messing about. Like, okay, that's your nickname.
Right.
To the point where I don't know the guy, but I like personally prior to him emailing, but I had said to him, wow, that must've been, was this your nickname in high school? And he said, oh yeah, everywhere I go, that's the nickname. Right.
Yeah.
So that's awesome because then you don't have to, either have a bad nickname or try to invent one for yourself, and like that never works.
Right. Yeah. I was a good nickname namer. I was the guy who gave everybody their nickname.
Right. We talked about this a couple of years ago, I think now.
Maybe.
I think we did. I remember this now. Because you nicknamed
a girl.
Do you
want a nickname?
No, I'm good.
Are you sure? Do you have one?
Yeah. Captain Thorhammer.
No, you really do have one though, right?
Do I?
I don't know. A-Train really. Or something?
Oh, that is absolutely self-induced and done with irony. Yeah, I do
how
that.
About, it's like how about Long Story?
No, that just seems too British.
Yeah. Alan Long Story.
Yeah, Alan Wadsworth Long Story. From Bath. Okay, so anyways, point long story, you're right, that was a long one, but Psycho wants to know what iPad posing app you used.
I think it's just called Posing App, and it's got like a little connotation for photographers and models, but I think it was just called Posing App.
Okay.
And it's drawings. It's all drawings as opposed to actual pictures. And it gives you little tips, and you can save your favorites into a separate folder. But no, it's quite handy. It's got, you know, subsections for women and for men and groups and children and all sorts of neat ideas. So,
okay.
And of course, like every app out there, when you once you pay for it $3.99, it's got a special like glamour section or something that you have to pay extra for if you want to unlock those photos. So I did not unlock the glamour section, but there was plenty there for me to use and what I needed.
It's a free plus.
No, it was like a $3 or something.
Oh, $3, but then
Wanted the additional content of the special glamour section, there might have been one other special section that was an extra $1 or an extra $1.99. I don't know exactly. What I needed, it was the $3 or $3.99. I'm not exactly sure, but it was perfect for what I wanted.
Okay, so it's called Posing App, and if it's not called Posing App, Adam,
I'm pretty sure it's called Posing App because I opened my iPad up to check it when you asked me.
Okay, Posing App. Awesome. I seem to have fixed my 40D.
Okay, you did another cleanse on it?
I've done four passes now.
Wow.
With the isopropanol or isopropyl alcohol, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
I was getting worried because it would work and then it would not work. And so I thought, oh no, like I'm going to have to disassemble this thing. And so I did a YouTube check on how to disassemble it, and I could do it. I did not want to do it.
Right.
So I'm going to actually dig it out right now. Let's hear. Yep. Works.
Awesome.
So this is this morning, and it's been a couple days now, so it works. Still works. So that's good news. But it took four passes of doing the dumping the alcohol in the battery compartment trick.
Right.
And then hammering the button until it all cleared out.
So this is now you're a believer. This is highly recommended now in your opinion.
From my personal experience, yeah, it works. So okay. if you are having trouble with the contact in your trigger release, check it out. You can check it out on YouTube. There's a really low rent video that is very helpful.
Awesome.
See, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. The point is I think people were saying that in the States, you could send it into a basic. A camera shop was charging around $200 to do this fix, which seemed a little bit low considering how much work is done. So I expected it to be more. I expected it to be about $300 in Canada or Germany. So I had to decide, is my 40D, my old 40D with, you know, however many 40, 50,000 clicks on it, is it worth $300 repair?
Right.
When I could probably go and buy a used one, which I checked online just out of curiosity, could probably find a used one for around $300.
Right.
But then I would have to have one that somebody else had owned and maybe kept in their, you know, in their cat's litter box. I don't know what people do with their cameras.
Right.
So I didn't know. So I long story short, not possible. I got it fixed and I'm glad because I really had no clue what to do. And I need a second camera. You have to have, if you're going to go and shoot any pro job, you better have a second camera.
Right. No, so, that's good advice.
So there you go. Now,
okay.
Little change this week to what did you shoot this week?
Okay.
We're going to make it, did you shoot anything interesting this week?
I did.
Okay, good. Let me see if I did. I don't think I did. I didn't write any notes down.
Okay.
But I don't, give us a, while my thing loads up, never mind, it's there. Let's see, I shot, no, cookie stuff. Snow stuff. Oh, guess what? Yeah, still snowy and crappy here.
Awesome.
Supposed to break today, though, in be plus 10. So maybe that will be nice. But yep, I shot nothing interesting. So what did you do?
Well, I went to the Dwayne Gervin workshop.
Right.
So I did that last weekend, and that was a ton of fun. So it was a creative lighting workshop with Dwayne, who was a guest, I guess, 2 weeks ago on the show, talking about the posing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was really neat. There was models and makeup artists, and he had sort of set up a number of different stations to work from. So most of the people there were, you know, I would say experienced photographers.
Okay, and you know what? Can I cut you off right here?
Sure.
Here's the thing is I want to hear all about this.
Right.
Like, but I'm not joking. In great detail. If we do it right now, it's going to eat the entire show. And I'm going to have to cut you off, and it's going to be short, and I don't want to do that.
Well, I wasn't going to give a lot of detail. What I was going to say, though, just in terms of what I shot, was I shot some pictures of models with makeup in different lighting setups. And mm-hmm. if people want to check them out, I posted a bunch of the pictures in a Facebook photo album on our Facebook site. So
awesome.
they can check that out there.
But what I'm saying is possibly next week, I would like you to go into great detail and tell me about your experience at a workshop.
Okay, well, it was a good experience. There you go.
Awesome. Next week,
I'd highly recommend it.
Next week's episode, we're going to be back to back two weeks in a row, all about Adam. Man, that's like your dream.
That's really because my wife doesn't listen to me. So,
yeah, she listens, she just doesn't hear.
That's right.
I know what that's like.
She just shut the light off, and she's going to go to sleep while I'm talking.
Oh wow, that's greatest. Lucky her. So okay, so next week, that's it. The show next week is going to be all about your workshop experience because I'm interested to hear about that. So
it might be a 7-minute episode because I might have just said everything. No, I'm sure there's stuff I could talk about.
I'll go along on a few aspects of it.
Okay.
Last week's Exivoku. Oh yes. What was the missing requirement last week? Do you remember?
No. No, I was mostly not paying attention.
Well, there's a big surprise for everybody involved. I'm going to have to actually go and look now.
I'm going to say focal length.
Were we going for focal length? That was the missing?
I have no idea.
Yep, focal length. Good for you, Adam.
Yeah.
So the focal length, everything else was very similar for you and I. The ISO was slightly off, but the rest, the f-stop and the shutter speed are both the same. Mine was 200 millimeters focal length, and yours was 70.
Okay.
So there's the difference. Were you able to back up more and go longer, or were you kind of at the your limit of how far back you could move physically?
No, I could have probably gone back further, but not a lot further.
Okay. Yeah. That's my instinct. That usually is to shoot at 200 if I can. But I had plenty of room of where I was situated. So there you go. That's last week's Exifoku.
Okay.
Photo challenge this week. We did cookies. We talked about cookies last week. Cookies and gobos.
Right.
And did not get any hate mail asking us to not mix the two together. So that's good.
Okay. That is good.
So, you want to go first or second pick?
I'll go second.
Okay, here's my photo of my wife. I thought I'd take a page out of your book and just think, hey, you know, rather than go ask somebody, I'll just force my wife to take a picture.
Yep, that's my move.
That's the move. And so, yeah, no, I had this in mind as soon as I self-issued the cookie challenge. I knew I wanted to do something that looked like it looked natural. And this is not natural. We had no sun this week. So this is it. This is my wife making cookies.
Okay.
Which is I never thought of as being ironic until after. I was like, oh, yeah, she's making cookies in a cookie picture. That's a little too cute for my liking.
Right. We kind of talked about that, not doing that last week, right before the end. And you went ahead and did it, so.
Yeah. Okay, no, she's making cake. What did I say?
Cookies.
She's making chocolate chip gobos.
Okay.
So it's all fine. So I don't know. What do you want to know?
I'm guessing you put a flash outside of the window.
I did.
And then that's kind of just the pattern that you would get if there was sun outside?
Yep. This is 100% fake sunshine. And because that 9:15 is not 9:15 a.m. That's 9:15 p.m.
Right.
9:14 if you're German. And so that was I didn't bother to change the clock. I thought about doing that just to make it authentic, but it's all the way above there, so didn't. Put a flash outside and blasted it through the window, so we give us that sort of long shadows look.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to give some light on my wife, and so I basically used the same cardboard fake window that I have in last week's album art.
Right.
And I'm shooting through that to give the window, the fake window look on her and the orange wall.
Okay.
Also, I want to point out that I thought it would be kind of funny to just kind of put a little puff of flour in her face so it looked like she was baking, because, not like she's ever had that happen. Like, that would only happen to me because I'm bad at it.
Right.
But it doesn't register well. It just kind of looks goofy.
Yeah.
Like maybe she's been doing cocaine or something. also badly.
Right.
Just to point that out, that was all me and a bit of a fail on that regard.
Okay.
So, any thoughts at all?
No.
No.
If I didn't know this was a cookie photo, then I probably would have thought that was natural light.
One thing then I will point out. Not really point out, but I will tease it. And if you know the answer, don't say it. I want people to figure it out. There is something intentionally wrong with this photo. I've done something on purpose to make it look that, like, there's something that should be a little off-putting, and that's all. That's all I'm going to say.
I know what it is. Do you want me to say it?
No, I don't. We'll talk off camera. I would like people to see if
they can. It was going to be my only criticism, but you're right. It is more natural looking.
Okay, we'll talk about that off the air. So what is the mistake here? And I promise you, it was 100% on purpose for the show.
Okay.
All right. And so that. Basically, in a nutshell, it's a two flash setup, both hard lights, one outside, one in the in the living room or in the kitchen, and that's that. That's all I did to light it.
Okay.
What I ended up doing, like I shot an ambient just a couple minutes after while I was setting up or taking down, putting everything away, I snapped a quick ambient light only picture just to show the difference of how it actually looked.
Right.
And so there, I'll post that as well, and you can see the difference without flash.
Okay.
So there you go. That's what, that's that. Your picture. Now this is, okay. I'm guessing this is inspired by your workshop.
This was exactly the point. I was showing off my skills as a makeup artist.
Mm-hmm.
So I convinced my wife that I was going to be doing her makeup and then taking a picture. And so I did her makeup, as you can see. And then I took a shot with the gray background paper in behind her. But of course, I wanted it to look a little different than just gray background paper. So I wanted to kind of give it, I don't know, sort of a dark mystical look. So I put a piece of black foam over my flash and kind of made like a little bit of a grid. I just kind of cut little squares out of the black foam to give it sort of a pattern,
mm-hmm.
and then shot it into the paper, and then just basically played around with the distance until I got something that I thought was interesting, and that's it. So it kind of, it doesn't register as extreme as I initially thought it was going to. But at this point, my wife had already endured a face painting, and she was going to give me about 5 more minutes before she killed me. So this is kind of the gradient effect that we got. So in my head, it was going to be, I don't know, a little bit more tie-dye, a little less haze,
uh-huh.
and this is what it is. But like I said, the flash, the way I set up the lighting, and this was kind of a light I toyed around with, and I posted some pictures of face painting my kids, was like a bounce umbrella overhead, just one light that's the key light.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got two flashes, one off the paper in behind her and one on her in an umbrella almost directly overhead. You can sort of tell by the shadows on the left side of her face. So mm-hmm. it's almost straight overhead into a bounce umbrella. And so basically that flash with my trigger is dangling in a very precarious position that looks like it might fall down at any second. So, right. Yeah, it was like, let's get this done real quick before I break all my stuff. Mm. And I'm going to keep running back to the behind flash because it's not performing the way I want it to. And now we're in our tiny space with a 70 to 200 millimeter lens. And I can't get enough separation between her and the back. And now I'm in too tight. And there's not enough room to see the cookie. And here you go.
There you go. Yeah. No, it's I didn't realize you had done the background with a grid like you had said. I thought perhaps you'd shot through the ficus plant like we talked about.
I didn't have a ficus plant. Oh. I didn't have any plants. So.
See, neither one of us used a plant, which we have plants. I have plants. Well, my wife has plants. Let me correct that. And not, oftentimes I do that, but just funny that neither one of us did that. So there you go. And that's a great result for something that's on it's on the flash unit itself.
Yes.
Well, and that's a great result. So that sort of takes a little bit of the guesswork out because you're not focusing on how far the grid is from the flash. All you're thinking is how far is the flash from the background.
Right.
Good. I like it.
So that's what I did. And then after all that fiddling around, and I swear, I try to get my challenge picture done in under 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. Like that's usually my plan going in is how can I get this done in under 30 seconds?
Right.
And so this was an epic fail in regards to the time because, you know, I had to face paint her first, which I think took about 7 minutes. So I didn't spend a ton of time, but I'm pretty happy with my awesome face paint job. But then the screwing around with the lighting in the back was at least, like I spent at least 15 minutes and it was still not what I had anticipated. So yeah, this took much longer than expected. And then the next morning.
Okay. Well, hang on. What would you have done different? Next time you're going to go do this, what's your takeaway?
I think my takeaway is, and this comes to what happened the next morning is that in that same room, I have a perfect set of blinds situated to what would have been camera right, my wife's left, that I could have stuck a flash outside, same background paper, same everything, just shot the flash through the blinds and I would have got a perfect pattern up against that paper.
Right.
And so I was just like, damn, I did not think of that until the next morning.
To be 100% fair to you, I actually meant to talk about blinds on the show last week, like Venetian blinds being the number one go-to thing, natural gobo cookie.
Right.
And I completely forgot to bring it up. Like, they are awesome. Now, the reason I forgot to bring it up is because they're not really very popular here in Germany. They use a whole different setup. It doesn't matter. But Venetian blinds are not a thing.
Right.
And so it kind of goes out of my thought process when I'm here, and that's why I didn't bring it up. But I absolutely recommend using blinds to the point that when you're lighting on a film set, like when I was in film school, we had blinds, like the horizontal ones, not like the vertical ones you're showing.
Yeah.
We had the horizontal ones that you would basically mount, like just take with you into the studio or wherever and just hang them in the middle of nowhere just so you could shine light through them.
Right.
Because it looks natural. It looks like what you're talking about here. So if I can go back and correct last week, use blinds. Okay, go ahead.
So then the next morning I wake up and there was actually sun out for a change. And my daughter's lying on the couch and she's not feeling well. So she's just couching it. Mm-hmm. And the sun's coming through the window, through the blinds, and it's projecting perfectly on the wall behind her and on her. And I thought, this is what I was looking for, the 30-second solution. So I ran up and grabbed my camera, took the photo. Wish that this had happened the day prior, but it did not. But anyways, it made me think, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I should have done. I should have just stuck my flash on the other side. And then, I mean, I could have tilted the blinds and put the angle of the flash to get it exactly where I had that paper originally. But bottom line is... That was sort of my learning for the day was, hey, here's a cookie whenever I want it.
Yep. And, you know, so there's no other flash involved with
there's nothing. No, that's all natural light.
Love the catch light in the eye, too.
Looks great. Me too. I really liked how that photo turned out. So,
yeah.
So there you go. I learned something for sure. Now I kind of wanted to go back. I don't think my wife would be happy with me face painting her again, mm-hmm. but I kind of wanted to go back and see what the result would have looked like had I just, you know, done what you had done, which was put the flash on the other side and project the cookie that way.
Next time. Do it again.
Next time. Yeah, there you go.
So Eggs of Oku for this week. We're going to use the your wife's photo.
Okay.
And my wife's photo. And Eggs of Oku, let's read off mine first. I shot mine at ISO 100 at f5.6 at a shutter speed of 1/30th of a second.
Wow.
That was on purpose. Handheld, too. So, you know. Wow. Yeah.
You're steady.
Yeah, I'm a pretty big deal. And no, it, because most of the light is coming from the flash, the flashes, it's okay to, you know, you can get away with hand holding it. Normally, I wouldn't be able to hand hold that 1/30th, but the reason I did 1/30th is because I tried a couple at 1/200th, and it looked too sharp. Like, it looked like the contrast was too great between the shadow and the light. And by going down to 1/30th of a second, I allowed a little bit of the ambient from the overhead lamps to sort of fill in those shadows,
right,
and take away some of the darkness. So that's why I went with 1/30th. Now, what is the focal length on this? I didn't say it, right? No, I didn't say it.
No.
Okay, so what we need to know, my focal length. Now, Adam's picture, you shot at ISO 125, f7.1, and a shutter speed of 1/160th, which is the maximum, and used a flash. So the question is, what is your focal length? So what are the focal
and
lengths?
And I think I said the lens I used, but still, that there's a range there.
Yeah, and like you mentioned before, everybody knows that you have two lenses. And so all of your focal lengths are going to be between 70 and 200 no matter what.
Spoiler alert, I am going to buy another lens soon. So.
Okay. Well, we all look forward to that.
Yeah.
So this week's topic is this one, is the full Schwarz.
That's what it's called?
I you know, it doesn't really play like the full Monty, but it's supposed to be like the full Monty, but the full Schwarz.
What are you going to use for album art?
Well, you can leave your hat on. I don't know. I think it's just going to be a complete black because, as we all know, Schwarz is German for black.
Or maybe something from Spaceballs.
No, it's going to be the black album.
All right.
Yeah, that's been used. Yeah, so what we want to do is just talk about your first. Has it been a month yet? How long have you had the camera for? 2 months?
Yeah, I think I got it in beginning of January, so January and February, so 2 months, yeah.
So we're going to talk about Adam's jump to the full frame and the 60. So we're going to talk about full frame in general and the 60 specific. Boom, initial thoughts on using the 60, do you like it?
Yes, the answer is I do like it. I love it. There's no comparison.
Okay, drive safe, everybody.
Yeah, that's it. Go get one. If you don't, you're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it.
We learned not to call names.
No, it's full name calling.
Okay.
I'm doing it. I'm doing it right now. No. The reality of it is that I love it. If you've got some spare money hanging around burning a hole in your pocket, then go buy one. And if you already have a full frame camera, you know what I'm talking about.
Right. So if you're considering upgrading and you're thinking, oh man, do I really need that? Do I want that camera? What you're saying is, yep, pull the trigger.
Yes.
Okay. Why is that? What do you like about it?
Well, everything. But I mean, I can go down the list. I mean, first off, for me, you know, it just feels different. Like it feels different in your hands. It's got some weight to it. It's so funny because the last time I pulled out my old camera, the T2i, which is, you know, more of an entry level DSLR, when I pull that out, it feels like a toy. It's unbelievably light. Mm-hmm. The crop sensor camera and the body is plastic versus, you know, it's a whatever they make these things out. There's a name for the poly whatever.
Sure.
I don't know.
I don't care.
Yeah. It's heavy.
Yeah.
It feels like a camera in your hands, whereas I never noticed that before coming from, you know, the extraordinarily lightweight plastic bodies. But now it actually feels sturdy in your hands. It feels durable. There's the grip feels better. So all of just the general feel of the camera is night and day different. The back dial is nice to work with. I didn't have that on my previous camera.
Right.
The LCD is extraordinary. You know, how sharp it is to look at. And it gives you a much more accurate reproduction of what it's going to look like, what the actual picture is going to look like. I found with my previous camera, it was nowhere close. And so I couldn't trust the LCD at all. I'm not saying I have full trust in the LCD now. I have a lot more faith when in you the say LCD it wasn't on
close,
this camera?
It wasn't close. What was not close?
Everything. I mean, I had to look at the histogram, like the color, the light, the focus, everything on the back of the LCD of my previous camera wasn't nearly good enough. Now the resolution on the back of that LCD is extraordinary. When you check critical focus, it's amazing the detail you can see in the back LCD. So
that's a big one for me. Is I enjoy being able to check like because on the 40D checking critical focus is almost pointless.
Right.
Unless you want to be in the middle of a very important shoot and then be so scared that you're getting everything out of focus that you pee a little. Only to get back and find out that everything is razor sharp.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I found with the T2i is I had I couldn't tell. I had to assume that some of them were going to be in focus, but I could not tell from the LCD.
Right.
So it does give you that sort of assurance. So that's another thing I love is the LCD. Probably the biggest game changer from moving from the camera I had to this one is the ISO. Mm-hmm. Is just like I'm using flash so much less because the ISO is crazy good.
Okay, let's start with there because there's a couple things I wanted to get into. One of them is the full frame aspect, which we'll talk about. But you have talked about the high ISO being the big thing. And now that you think that's a bigger game changer than the full frame?
I think they're, for me, it's probably equal, okay. But it is so awesome for me because I have young kids and it used to be, okay, I got to stop. I got to go locate a flash, you know, like it's just, if I had my camera, okay, now I've got to change everything, you know, for lighting purposes.
Right.
Whereas now I don't need to. I don't need to carry that extra weight and I don't need to stop at all and make adjustments for lighting. Now, granted, I've got some of my favorite all-time pictures using flash and using lighting, but I was just astounded. The kids were playing in the house the other day and they had some friends over and I just was catching some candid shots, but I was shooting on like, you know, an ISO of, I want to say probably, I don't know, over 3000. And I was shooting at super shallow depth of field. I want to say 2.0 or 2.8, like very, very wide open. And I was just getting marvelous photos with no flash indoors, which mm-hmm. again, there's no way I could have done that on my previous camera without adding flash. And then that changes everything, right? You're shooting at different shutter speeds now. Like there's just so many, it's just the domino effect that has to change as soon as you start, you know, changing into a flash mode. So, mm-hmm. I can't say enough good things about what you can do with the just the increased ISO range.
Now here's the caveat, like that I could talk about is as I agree with you, like, but generally, and please refute this if you disagree. I find that high ISO makes bad lighting acceptable. It doesn't often take your regular, you know, half-assed lighting and make it look phenomenal.
Right.
Like your pictures that you're talking about, which you're getting marvelous results, are likely a result of the fact that, A, your kids are doing something interesting. But it's not like all of a sudden they're extremely well lit because of the high ISO.
No, I beg to differ. I think okay. that the ambient lighting in my house is far better than I ever recognized because of the limitations of my previous camera. I could never go there.
Okay.
And so I'm finding I can get great results, not just, you know, half decent results, but great results without ever going to the flash. In a lot of cases, stuff that I far prefer than flash pictures. So, and again, like I'm saying, 3000, I mean, 2500 ISO looks remarkable, looks like 800 on my other camera. Like it's unbelievable mm-hmm. the comparable. So, yeah, no, I love it. And like I say, I have used flash probably a quarter of what I would have on the other camera for the pictures I've taken in the last 2 months.
Okay. So in terms of run and gun, I can see that being a thing. But I mean, you still took the time to light your wife for your challenge.
Oh, yeah. I love lighting. That's the other thing is that if I'm going to take a portrait or if I'm going to do pictures for somebody that's paying me, well, then I'm using lights because I love the off-camera lighting look. But again, with my kids, it's on occasion that they're going to sit still long enough for me to set it all up. So it's nice not to have to do that and to just, you know, like you say, run and gun.
I'm getting into that right now that my daughter's getting a little older. And the whole my intent for the for this week's last week's photo challenge with the cookie was to shoot a shot of her.
Right.
Did not cooperate one bit. Had the lighting all set up, and she just would not participate. And so that's a situation of, yeah, you're right. That's where a high ISO would come in handy, because there's no way I'm going to get my daughter to sit in one spot.
Well, and I have to pick. I had to pick. I wanted lighting for my kids because I did them in the face paint, and I posted an album on Facebook of my kids all in the face painting with the overhead lighting set up with the umbrella. But it was like, okay, choose. You've got 3 minutes to do this, and are you going to tinker and try to get a cookie in here too? No, you're not. You're just going to get a good shot of your kids because you've got them all face painted and you want a good shot. So that's what it came down to. It's like, yeah, there's no time to get the other lighting because I know that I'm on the clock, right?
So you would suggest then bolting a couple of strobes to your ceiling in a set position and then would just wheel your kids in quickly. Bam, bam, bam. Take the same shot every week.
Exactly.
That's something I would look into. I would look into doing, having a studio set up. But that the key is to have them bolted to the ceiling so they're out, and upside down, so they're out of the way.
Right.
So you're not banging into stuff, you know, when you're watching the Canucks game or whatever it is that you're doing.
Yes.
So high ISO does matter. I find that I think it is situational. So it's not for me. It's not a game changer where you're going to throw your lights in the garbage.
Right. No, I'm definitely not. It's just like you say, it's situational and certainly it's very useful, but not absolutely necessary. You can do it the way I have long done it, which is light everything.
Right. Now, and if I find from my perspective, I don't find the high ISO to be as much of a game changer because of my workflow. Now, as you just mentioned, and we talked about with the kids, yeah. And as my kid gets older, it's going to be even a bigger deal if we're shooting inside. But I find for almost all of my other workflow, I tend to max out at ISO 1600 anyways, and then I introduce lights. I make sure that I have lights or shoot in good scenarios that have good window light or make sure I create / find flattering light.
Right. Now, here's an example for me, because this is a situation that I see that will present itself. And this for Canadians is that hockey rinks. My kids, my son for sure, my daughter maybe, probably going to play hockey. Mm-hmm. And hockey rinks have very poor lighting. Now, I own an F4 70-200 lens. That lens on my T2i in the hockey rink will yield horrible results because I'll probably need a shutter speed of around 1/400th of a second, mm-hmm. right?
When they're young, when they get older, even faster.
Exactly. And so at those shutter speeds, I'm not going to have enough light with an F4 lens. Mm-hmm. So that lens basically is not going to be usable. So I hear a lot of people say, well, you know, they just go out and drop $2,000 and buy a 2.8 70-200. Well, the game changer is that high ISO now, I can shoot it at 8,000. And I tried this. I talked about it, you know, whatever, right after I got the camera. Gets unbelievable results mm-hmm. on a high ISO for shooting in a hockey rink. So right there, I mean, that's a $1,200 savings, right?
And not only the money savings, because if you can throw money at the problem, good for you. But when you're now shooting at 2.8, now your depth of field is going to be much smaller.
Exactly.
So you're going to have to, you have a less wiggle room to miss focus. And with hockey, obviously, there's a lot of movement. And that 2.8 does make a big difference, whereas going from ISO 3200 to 6400 might not make as big a difference with this camera. But what I do recommend to people, if you, before you go out and do that, what I would probably do is go and rent a 70-200 to F2.8. Because generally you can find, like in Vancouver, you're going to pay around $35 for the day to rent it.
Right.
And if you rent it on a Friday in some places, if you rent it Friday night for a Saturday, you get to keep it Sunday as well because they're closed. They basically just give you the free weekend. So let's say your kid's in a hockey tournament, $35, you're going to go shoot with a $2,400 lens. You're going to get a lot of pictures in that time.
Absolutely.
So that's something that's what I would do. I wouldn't go out and buy a $2,400 lens just to shoot my kid playing hockey, because ultimately, you ask yourself, how many pictures do you need of your kid playing hockey?
Oh, you need a lot.
Do you need a lot? I don't know. I don't know that you do. I mean, it's nice to have those. Yeah. Okay. Great. It's nice that you have them, but after once you have,
no, I'm kind of that's tongue in cheek, of course. But no, I think the reality of it is you don't need a lot, but what you probably end up doing is you end up shooting pictures of everybody's kid on the team, mm-hmm. and then once you do that, you start to be expected to shoot everybody's kid on the team every game of the year,
yes.
for every year of their life. So yeah, you probably will end up shooting more pictures than you anticipate, especially if you're getting good results.
My suggestion in that case, if you're going to be on the same team with the same people, is establish a precedent early that yeah, you're going to be shooting pictures of everybody's kid, but you're going to pass the coffee can around and you're going to put some money in there. No, I'm serious, because just, you know, go ahead and buy your own $2,400 lens.
Right.
You know, and I'm not talking about making money. However, you know, stuff breaks, needs to be repaired, you know, it wears out, all those things. That's an issue.
Okay.
So if you get into that situation where you're expected, now I know exactly what you're talking about. Expectations happen like that. You can find out, oh, you just wore out your camera. Now you have a $200 repair bill, and all of a sudden everybody is scarce.
Right.
Everyone's off in the parking lot, and you're left holding the bill. So don't do that.
And there's one other thing I want to mention with the 60, and maybe you have other questions. So this still is outside of the parameters of just the full frame itself, which is awesome, and I love. But is the Wi-Fi?
That's thing. I wanted to ask all about that. How does that work?
Yeah. It is awesome. I mean, I don't know exactly the internal mechanics, but what I have read and what I think happens, so you get a little app that's a free app that you download from on the App Store that's like a Canon utility remote. Mm-hmm. And basically what you do is the camera itself, like you punch in codes, and so it connects to the app or to your smartphone. You can use the app on an iPad or a smartphone or on your computer. But basically, the phone or the camera itself acts as a hotspot, and then it will relay any of the images taken directly to your iPad, computer, phone.
Okay.
And so I'm shooting in RAW only, but I think what it does is that it does an internal conversion so that it speeds up the file transfer. So
well,
the image
you're seeing on the back of your LCD screen,
yes.
is a JPEG.
Okay, so it's relaying like a 2 megabyte version mm-hmm. of whatever you're taking, because it's a 20 megapixel camera. So it's downsizing it to like a reasonable size. I want to say about 2 megabytes, and then it relays that image.
2 megabytes. Or megapixels?
I'm thinking about file size. It's to a 2 megabyte size. Yeah. So it's a JPEG, and to a 2 megabyte JPEG that it then sends to your phone or sends to the iPad or whatever. But it is unbelievably cool if you're out on a shoot, and I've used it a couple times in this scenario, and you want to show people, like I know you've talked about in the past not showing people, but if you want to show people what the images are looking like, bingo, you know, you pop the iPad and now you're looking at a big screen, and you can see the images right on there. So mm-hmm. it's pretty darn cool. Or in the case of you're at a hockey game, and this is maybe, or a play or wherever you might be taking pictures, I know the people who are the social media people like to post things, and they take pictures on their phone and post them. Well, now you can take a much better picture mm-hmm. with your camera and have your wife post them.
I'm assuming
it's your wife that's posting them.
No.
Okay.
My wife does not know what social media is.
Okay, well, my wife is the social media expert, so she's posting them in our situation. So, but it is, yeah, super cool. And if you want to, and I haven't used it in this capacity, you can have someone walking around with your camera, and you can be, you know, basically controlling all the functions, looking at live view through your iPad and auto-focusing, changing aperture, changing settings. And again, I'm not sure how much of a use I have for that. Some people assure me they do use it.
Mm-hmm.
And reviewers talk about the potential applications of it, but it looks cool anyway. So I don't know if I'll use it, but it certainly looks cool.
Can you use this for a self-portrait?
Yes. And I think that's the situation that I will use it. I just haven't done a self-portrait in a little while.
That works out because you love you.
Yeah, I do. So maybe that'll be my next next project.
To transferring your RAW files, though, you still plug that directly into your computer.
Oh, yeah.
Will the Wi-Fi handle file transfer like that or no?
What do you mean?
Like basically, could I be done with my shooting, set my camera down and have it sync all of the raw images via Wi-Fi while I go get coffee.
I think it can, but I still think you're looking at compressed versions of the images as opposed to the full raw files.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It will do the complete raw transfer. That's what
I'm not sure. I'm not convinced. Maybe it will, but I don't know that for a fact. So, and again, I have no use for that.
Right.
Yeah, I'll get back to you on that.
I can't imagine it being, just because of the sheer volume of data that would have to be transferred.
Yeah,
I can't imagine it being
very efficient.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's more of a preview situation. So let's get into the full frame aspect. Okay.
Yes.
And I want you to try to explain to me why our listeners, why do they need full frame?
I don't think they do.
Okay. What is full frame? Tell me what full frame is.
Well, it's again based on like the 36 by 24 millimeter size that 35 millimeter film used to be.
Correct. Still is.
Or still is, yeah. But it's based on that size frame. And so the sensor in a full frame sensor is a larger size built to essentially that same specification as opposed to the cheaper, smaller sensors that were built to save money that are essentially the crop sensors in our camera. So instead of a crop sensor, my understanding is you're looking at essentially a cutout or the center portion of the image,
right?
Because most of the time you're using the same lenses, or I guess in a lot of cases you're using the same lenses, but on mounted on a full frame camera, you'll have a larger, I don't know if it's called angle of view, a larger field of view.
Correct. You'll be recording more info. The smaller sensor in essence on the Canon, for instance, is going to record roughly 63% of what the full frame sensor would.
Right.
Okay. So that's why we call it a 1.6 crop factor.
Right.
Now there's a lot involved in a lot of misinformation going around and what happens if and what happens that. The bottom line is in this guy's not so humble opinion, the full frame is a pretty big deal over virtually nothing. Virtually nothing. Not nothing.
Okay.
There is a little bit of something there. I happen to love my full frame camera. However, it's not the end of the world.
Like it, no. It,
absolutely not. Now the joke, not the joke, but in the film world, what we call full frame in digital is called in German is basically called small picture. 35 millimeter is known as Kleinbild, which means it's the small version because everybody was, you know, if you're really serious about shooting film, you're shooting at the minimum, you're shooting in medium format, which is a much larger negative.
Right.
Or you're going to do something much, much larger, like a what's called large format, which is like an 8x10 sheet or whatever the actual specifications are. But the negative is like a full piece of paper. That is huge.
Now, for me, the reason I think I like it is because I like to shoot people, right? So yeah. I like portraits. I like portraits of my kids, of my wife. Those are primarily my targets. And so portrait lenses generally are longer lenses, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so minimum probably being a 50 millimeter.
That would not be considered portrait necessarily, but sure.
Yeah, but so 50 or definitely longer, 70 in that 70 to 200 range more likely. So my biggest problem was wanting to shoot those pictures is very difficult with a crop sensor unless you're outside.
Correct. Or have a lot of space to deal with, yes.
Or yeah, and I'm not living in a mansion, and so that isn't a luxury that I have. So of course, it gets very difficult shooting with even the 85 millimeter inside your house because you're always too close.
Right.
So for me, and the people that I shoot, my primary subject matter, it was just always a big constraint that I was always in too close. And so, okay, you can buy a 30 millimeter, which I have, right? But that's not an ideal focal length for portraiture.
Not for portraiture, exactly. This is where it all gets into a really muddy gray area. Because as I contend, the full frame versus crop sensor isn't a big deal up to a point. Like there's the law of diminishing returns. If you start talking about a very small sensor, like one tenth the size instead of just over half.
Right.
One tenth is going to yield very different results. For instance, like go ahead and take a picture with your iPhone and see what I have no idea what the actual size of the sensor is in your iPhone, but it's very small. And take a picture. Try to take a good picture of a person, comparing it with your 70 to 200 on your full frame. You're going to notice a big difference in that image.
Right.
Okay. So, but in terms of going from the APS-C or whatever the proper nomenclature is, the crop sensor.
That's it, I think. Yeah.
Going from that to a full frame isn't as big a jump as one would think. Now that being said, you do need a different set of lenses. And if you're going to shoot the same picture, you're going to shoot with a 30 millimeter on the crop sensor versus a 50 millimeter on the full frame. In close, you're probably going to notice a little difference in the people.
Right.
If you step back a little ways and use it properly, you might not notice. You might not notice the difference. Now, to make that point, I dug through my archives from the last year and just picked 9 photos at somewhat random, just from my personal library, that were taken. Some of them were taken with the full frame camera. Some were taken with the crop sensor 40D.
Okay.
Okay. That's all the info I'm giving you. I'm not going to give you lenses. I'm not going to give you anything else. I want the listeners to go ahead and have a look at this, and if they like, submit which ones you think. They're all numbered 1 to 9. Submit which ones you think were full frame and which ones you think were crop sensor, and we'll talk about it next week on the show.
Okay.
Just see if you can tell the difference. I'm not going to tell you how many are crop and how many are full frame. What I will tell you is this: I did not do the move where they're all crop sensor, and at the end I just have a big laugh and go ha 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 ha, I tricked you.
Okay.
I promise that I don't like those guys.
Okay.
Okay. So if you had that plan for next week, don't do it.
All right.
So yeah, but they're definitely some are full frame, some are crop.
Okay.
So have a look and see if you can tell what the big difference is. In that regard, we had one listener send us an email, and I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me, but he basically was asking about his 7D. Is his 7D a good camera? Because he was kind of having doubts. And one of his friends was kind of, I guess, applying pressure or bullying him. I don't know what the proper term is now, that he did not buy a 5D because, he needed to have full frame. And he sort of felt like, oh, no, had he made a horrible error purchasing the 7D?
Probably, yes.
No, I assuaged his fears. But he basically brought up the idea of pixel density. Because someone had brought that up to him, like, well, wait a second, but the 7D has a higher pixel density than the 5D, which means that the 5D Mark II, for example, is a 21 megapixel camera spread over a full frame sensor.
Okay.
The 7D, I think, is an 18 megapixel camera spread over a sensor that's 63% of the size.
Right.
Which means that in pixels per inch, or pixels per centimeter, or whatever we're going to measure it, per millimeter, they're going to be closer together, and they're therefore more dense, and therefore take a better picture. Now, my contention is, it doesn't matter.
Right.
I mean, again, there are law of diminishing returns. If you have 1 pixel every 3 feet, well, you're going to have a weird picture. But have you ever noticed that with the 6D that you think, wow, I wish these pixels were jammed closer together?
No.
Doesn't come up.
Yeah.
And the example I used was great. So you have the pixel density on the 6D, and you think, okay, they're in there pretty tight. Well, now the 6.5D, 6D Mark II comes out.
Right.
And instead of being a 21 megapixel camera or whatever yours is, it's 100 megapixels on the same size frame. So it's 5 times more dense. Do you think your pictures are going to be better?
Maybe if you print them 50 feet by 50 feet.
Even then, you're not going to notice because nobody stands with their nose against the image at 50 feet,
right.
50 feet image. So it's not going to happen. Now, what if after the 100 megapixels, they come up with the, okay, we've got 1 million megapixels on the same size sensor. You're still not going to notice the difference, which is the big, I don't want to call it a scam, but the selling point with HD TVs is that, oh, but back in the day, a few years ago, it was, you better have full 1080p. That 720p ain't going to cut it. So you're going to buy a 32-inch 1080p. You better get the 1080p. Well, for the most part, you can't tell the difference between 720p and 1080p on a 32-inch television.
Right. It's just not big enough.
It's just not big enough. The pixel density is such that, no, they both look the same. Once you get much larger, then you can see a minor difference, but it's not as big a deal as they make it. So there's that.
Okay.
So long story, still long, 7D, great camera, especially because it has all the pro dials and stuff that you were missing.
Right.
So if I was going to upgrade, if I had an old Canon XSI or XS or something like that, which was more of an entry-level camera, which didn't have those dials, yeah, I would make the upgrade to the 6D. If I had a 7D, I would go and use every inch of that thing.
Yes.
With confidence and say, yeah, you know what? I'm not going to get the same results if I put a 50 millimeter lens on here as I would with a full frame, but I'm going to get almost identical with the 30 mil.
Right.
To the point that the difference will come in depth of field. It is so minor that I'll be surprised if you can tell if it would make the difference. So there you go. Last question, real quick. Have you had a lot of prints made from your 6D?
Not a lot. I have had some made.
Okay. Blown up large?
No, mostly 4x6s and 8x10. So nothing bigger than an 8x10.
Okay. That to me is part of the game changer moment, is how we, you know, look at the images. You know, are we only looking at them on the computer? In which case, guess what? You don't need the 18, 20 megapixels on a full frame. It's not going to be the issue.
Right.
It's later on that, printing is where the real measure is.
And I have to say that the 8x10s and the 4x6s that I have printed from the 6D have been good. But again, I was pretty happy with the lighting. And so there's a number of variables in there. I will say that post-production time has been probably cut in half using the 6D. I get it in camera right way more than I did with the T2i. And I think part of that is the LCD. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I think I was getting tricked. I wasn't always checking the histogram for verification. And sometimes, you know, depending on the lighting scenario, sometimes the histogram doesn't tell you everything that you want to know, right? So you still can be under or overexposing the actual part of the picture that you want to be exposed in a certain way. So I am finding that having an LCD that is quite accurate makes for getting it right in camera a lot better. I also find that I tend to be lazy and use the auto white balance, and the auto white balance on the new camera is incredible.
Great.
And so good that, again, that takes me from doing a lot less fiddling with white balance after the fact. So yeah, a few little things that do cut down my time doing photos.
Also remember that you are getting better at taking pictures.
Well, I'm sure there's that too, but I think the camera does make a difference there as well.
Right. That's a long debate that we don't have time to get into at this point. The other quick thing to think about too is that if you're using full frame lenses and not the crop sensor lenses, the Sigma 30mm is only for crop sensors, but if you're using the full frame lenses on a crop sensor camera, you are using the best part of that lens. The best part of that lens is in the center. And so if you compare, if you want to get in there and just really get on the pixel level and look really hard, which, why do you want to do that? You'll notice on the full frame camera, the pixels around the edge aren't as nice as like the image in the center.
Right.
So by using that crop sensor, you're using the best of the best. So there is that, something to consider there.
Okay.
So that's it. Challenge for next week. Do you have one?
No.
Yeah, shocker. all it's going through your head is, okay, whatever it is, how can I take a picture of my wife? You know, we haven't done in a while has been specific about black and white.
Okay.
Now, this isn't going to tie into next week's show, I don't think, or anything specific. I just thought about it. I haven't taken a specific black and white photo in a while, and especially for the show, so let's just do that. It could be anything you want to do, but it should be a good black and white photo.
Great.
That's it. Adam,
I'll just convert the picture I took this week of my wife into black and white.
And there you go with the phoning it in. That's why.
And I'm done. It's in the folder for you.
That's great. Where can people find your photos?
Facebook, Two Hosers Facebook page, which I guess you have to like us on Facebook before you can look at that stuff. Is that correct?
I don't think so.
Oh, you can just go on it? You don't even have to like us.
I got to tell you, I'm trying to figure out what like is on Facebook. Now, if I understand, like, first of all, I want to know what it is and why people do it. I
think if you like somebody on Facebook, like usually has to do with like more of a business than friending someone, which is your individual site.
But people like on my individual page, when people like my comments or pictures or something like that, nothing to do with business. That's the part I don't get. I have no idea what that means. Why are they?
It means that if they make a comment or if they like you, it goes into their feed on their page. So
okay.
That means other people that see their page will see their comments. And so I think that's how things spread on Facebook. That's okay. My understanding. Someone makes a comment, then everybody who is friends with that person would then see their comment. And so, you know, you ultimately you want people to comment and you want people to like your page because that's how it gets to their people and on.
Okay,
and on
so in terms of our Two Hosers page, which is not a personal thing, it's a business thing, like that I get. And so if people like it, then I guess it shows up. It's like subscribing and saying, okay, great, now I can, you know, every time we post something, it'll show up in their feed and they can say, oh,
right.
here's
that's the point.
That's it, the point of that
in their feed. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, but I don't think you need to like the show in order to make that happen. Although we would like it if you liked the show, and not for ego, just because it's you know, we can spread it. And one of the things I want to do in March, because oh, it's March, by the way, did I tell you that?
Yeah,
it's March now.
Yeah.
Whew, thankfully, I'm glad February's over. No offense, February, but one of the things I want to do in March, and I actually want to get you to help me is. Spread the word more, and that means spreading our wings on Flickr and making sure which I think means we have to kind of cross post and get people to check us out on Flickr and that and get over to the show and basically go wider. That's the plan.
Okay,
that's it. That's my whole plan, is go wider. So I just googled go wider and nothing. So I don't know what people are so excited about Google for, because it was a complete waste of my time.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Google. Can we?
Oh, and schwartzchronicles.com. That's the other place that my wife sometimes posts something once a month now.
I would like if she would quit her job just so she could post more for me. Because yeah. I like your kids. P.S. I like your kids, and I like to find out what they're doing.
Okay, well, I'm going to get on her for that.
Yeah, and I don't even need to. I kind of skim the text really because it's housewifey.
Yeah,
which isn't an insult. It's just that I'm not a housewife,
right?
And so therefore, it's not directed at me. But I do like the general stories and the pictures of your kids because you know I'll be all nice for a second. I miss your kids.
Okay, well, I'm sure they miss you too.
Obviously. So check
how about
out.
Your stuff?
Okay, my stuff, as always, at alnatridge.com, but the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find all you want to know about the Facebook, the iTunes, the mop closet. You can find that there.
Great.
I don't know what that is. So twohosers.com for the Twitter and everything you need to know. So that's it. Adam.
Yes.
Until next week, get out there and make better photos.